the Southern Hemisphere. This is the Bondi Tunes Radio Network with Henry O'Donovan.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting on FM in Canberra, Australia, and also in Tower, near Wellington in New Zealand, and we welcome our listeners across Europe and North America on various networks. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by two of our North America correspondents. Dawn Drost is in Orlando, Florida, and Thomas Booker is in San Antonio de Bayar in
Texas.
Ooh, yeah, actually, we're in the period of the Battle of the Alamo, come to think of it.
Oh,
It started in late February and it goes on for 13 days. So the Mexican army.
What's it made of?
I beg pardon?
What's it about?
The Battle of the Alamo was during the Texian Revolution against the Mexican occupation of Texas, Mexico and Texas. But anyway, there was a. The reality is, which is not spoken of, and as a matter of fact, three historians wrote a book about it called Forget the Alamo. But they basically, after the Mexican Revolution that threw Spain out of Mexico, I think that was when that occurred. So Mexico became an independent nation, and then they abolished slavery. Mm. And at the same time, the white people, all the Americans were drifting in trying to settle claims in Texas, and they wanted to come in to grow cotton, and they wouldn't be able to have a successful go at growing cotton unless they had slaves.
You know, America has such a rich history, Thomas. You've been on here, three or four years or something? I'm just wondering, Thomas, how come you don't have a Texas accent?
Oh, well, for one thing, I can't stand them.
I mean, so you're from Texas. You live there.
That Texas drawl.
There's no JR accent in your voice at all.
No. Mm. He's
not a native Texan.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I actually am from Louisiana, but I don't have that accent either.
I was just wondering that. I'm mad about accents. Dawn Drost. In Florida, you had a bit of, you've been in the wars, so to speak. We were just talking about the Alamo and wars of the past. What sort of wars have you been in, Dawn Drost?
One of my own making. But thank you. mine was not nearly as entertaining or fascinating as history. But my daughter joined my Special Olympics cheerleading team. And it is the first time she has competed in a sport. And my son joined as our MAD assistant. He's what's called a unified partner, someone who doesn't have an intellectual or physical disability, but still wants to be there to support the athletes. And since my daughter is artistic and severely epileptic, she qualifies as an athlete. And so we had our first competition on Saturday, and mind you, I don't know much about cheerleading. All the cheerleaders in my high school were pregnant. Honestly, I went to a very bad school.
It was also a
serious inner city school, like Jaime Escalante. Thomas, you probably know this because had a movie made about him. Yes. He taught at our school. We broke him. We made him retire after like 2.5 years.
Oh no! How did you do
so,
that?
I have no idea. But a friend of mine was in one of his math classes, and I know her, so I have an idea they broke him enough that he retired. So and that man, all he did was go around and be inspirational, and my high school broke that man. So this competition was at a proper gym. Like some areas had trampolines built into the ground. And when my son wasn't helping babysit our equipment, he was just sitting down quietly bouncing himself on the trampoline because he's got ADHD and he just likes to move constantly. And, but he was right there in front watching his sister perform and was cheering. But, my mother went, of course, to see her granddaughter compete. And, my fiance is also one of the coaches. He just kind of follows me and is there doing stuff. He's like our admin guy, because he doesn't really know anything about cheerleading either. So he was just kind of sitting down. But I was trying to get off all of the mats that they had stacked up. And and it was a big pile of mats. And I rolled my ankle and fell really hard onto the cement ground. And in the process, took out three cheerleaders of an opposing team like they were bowling pins, and continued rolling right into a wall. And
so how are you feeling?
No, there is no video because I've already been asked. I feel vaguely like I got hit like by a truck. There are everything today.
Well, so what's the damage, Dawn? What's wrong? What happened to you?
I feel, oh gosh. Well, my back hurts. My hip hurts. My hips hurt. My butt feels like I got hit by a cement truck. One of my legs is numb.
Oh, check that
since
out.
Last night.
Get that checked.
I see my neurologist on Thursday.
Yeah.
Are you getting swelling? And do you think you might have pulled some ligaments?
I'll find out. Because I've had transverse myelitis, which is a very rare neurological condition. One person got it on the AstraZeneca COVID trial in England.
Oh.
And because one person got it, it was not allowed in the United States. What it does is it rips a hole in your spine, and it allows spinal fluid to leak out, and it damages all your nerves.
Oh, my God.
One in a million get it. I've had it twice, which makes it 2 in 5 million.
Yeah,
so
you should definitely.
I was pregnant with my kids.
You've got to buy some lottery tickets.
Both times I was pregnant with my kids, I was studied very heavily and written up in a lot of medical journals. So the leg being numb thing, I was like, well, it's fine. I already see my neurologist on Wednesday or Thursday. Well, he'll be very fascinated. He'll be like, how? And he'll also want to know, is there video?
Yes, of course.
And I'll have to just be like, not of that, but thank you.
Well, Dawn, you're famous for all the wrong reasons, of course.
I am. Yes, thank you.
while I've got you, you know, here in Australia, you know, come November, we have a thing called Schoolies Week. It's when the schools close for the summer here in Australia. And they all go up to Queensland, to the Gold Coast. If you're listening in Europe or North America, a lot of people come to Australia, you would have probably gone to the Gold Coast and Bondi Beach, where I am. But the reason I mentioned this is because there's new safety efforts in Miami Beach in Florida ahead of what you call spring break.
Do they
all go nuts over there at spring break? And why Florida?
Yes.
Why Miami? Hot.
Not just Miami. Mm-hmm. It's not just Miami. They come to Florida in droves from all over the country. It seems to be one of the like stupid rites of passage for stupid people, but it's like a lot of frat house and sorority culture. Largely, it's a lot of party people culture. Yeah. So they will flood the beach communities, Miami, Daytona, on the other side in the Gulf Coast. They'll go to Tampa. They'll go to St. Petersburg. They will stay up in the Panhandle and go up there to like Panama City. They will hit all of those areas, and it will be a nightmare, and it will just be drinking, nonstop partying, lots of sexually transmitted diseases.
Yes.
Probably lots in Daytona, people will get hit by motorcycles, or people will ride motorcycles without helmets and they will get killed because it usually coincides with Bike Week. And
well, that's a bit of a bad mix, isn't it? Bike Week.
Where we also get tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah, where we also get tens of thousands of motorcyclists.
Oh my God.
So it's just
it
a bad mix. And right now we're having a tremendous measles outbreak.
Oh my God. This is another story. Oh, Henry, this is, should we talk about this?
Yes, so this is it. We're having a tremendous measles outbreak here because of the anti-vaxxers. So we're having COVID resurgence. We're having measles outbreaks. And Miami is one of the big hotspots for the measles outbreak. So I think that's why they're issuing
Miami. I identify measles with the 1970s when I was a kid. It's just strange. Thomas,
I had measles
over there in Texas.
I had German measles, and then I had the 2-week measles, and then I had later on I had the mumps.
Oh, the mumps. Now, that's very dangerous for your testicles, Thomas. It is. I'm serious. When I was a teenager, my stepmother said to me, oh, you got to watch those testicles. If you've got to get you mumps, you know, an injection for mumps because, you know, you need your testicles. I don't know.
That is the strangest thing I've
heard. Have you heard about that, Thomas?
No, I have not heard about that. I have heard, Don, there's a, you have a director of public medicine. You have a somebody who was appointed by the governor.
Ladapo.
And yes, and he was just on MSNBC talking about the fact that he didn't feel it was necessary for Floridians to be vaccinated, and he wasn't mandating that they be vaccinated to come to school. Mm. And so now that's part of the reason there is a measles outbreak in Florida. This is insane. This far right wing stuff.
It's true. I just had to Google. I was starting to Google mumps and testicles was the first thing that popped up.
Oh, there you go. It popped up, eh?
Complications can include inflammation of the testicles.
Yes.
Orchitis. Oh. That's his name. Orchitis. And this may lead to a decrease in testicular size, testicular atrophy.
Oh, no!
Yeah, charming stuff. You know what?
The testicles affects 1 in 4 males who gets mumps after puberty. There you go.
Thank you for doing that, Dawn. My God, I'm
hard. The more you know.
I really need a beer or something. It's sweltering. It's 3:30 in the afternoon in Sydney.
I don't even drink, and I feel like I need one after this.
Yes.
Thank you.
A lot of testicular talk. Thomas, what's going on? I'm parched here.
I just popped it. Did you?
Oh, no, I didn't.
No, I was too busy.
Oh, there it is.
I was too busy thinking about testicles swelling and shrinking.
Yes, it's. Thank
and
you.
And now I'm going to like walk around looking at every man and just be like, how are you, boss, sir?
So, yeah, every man. Thomas, thank you so much for that beer. It's crossed here in 7.3 seconds to Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, that good old NBN. Hot. It really works.
Mm. We love the National Broadband Network, not in Australia. So spring break is a big deal. I mean, it's very similar to Schoolies Week here, where they all go up to the Gold Coast and do stupid things. But you know what, guys? We were that age once. Did you guys do the spring break thing when you were younger?
Well, I don't know, because I was, you know, I was kind of like disinterested in girls at that time. I guess it must have been the bumps.
It's a mumps, man.
Such a shame. We were so proud when they dropped when he was 45.
But yeah, the
finally he'd gotten the mumps.
Yeah, they come to Texas, and they come to Texas in droves, and there's an extra complication that they go across the border, go into Mexico, and there have been all kinds of consequences from that, like murders and kidnappings and disappeared students and lots of stuff like that. And also they go down to Mexico and they act like jerks, like they act in Florida, and they act along the Texas coast. And it's just really kind of a nightmare scenario to be around all that crap.
I went to France.
When I was that age in California, the people at my school would go to Tijuana.
Yes.
I would just go to Disneyland because that was not my thing. Or I would take like a day trip to San Francisco.
Yeah, well, that's a nice place to go. I've been there. And of course, a lot of people now can, you know, a lot of kiddies can go overseas now. It's, you know, it's, it wasn't like that in the 70s and 80s, you know.
Some of them actually
did go to Europe. Sorry, Dawn?
I've never done that. That's when I hear those kinds of things, I'm like, those people have way more disposable income than they should.
I lived in France for a year, but at one stage I went there for a holiday, a so-called holiday, which is pretty easy if you live in Ireland or England. And we didn't have credit cards. And, you know, I starved in France. I couldn't even afford to make a phone call to my home and sort of starved my way back on the boat back to the UK and then back to Ireland for 24 hours because I didn't have a credit card, and they've all got credit cards now. And we could moan like old people if we want.
There are 9 million bicycles. temples in Beijing. That's a fact. It's a thing we can't deny, like the fact that I will love you till I die. We are 12 billion light years from the edge. That's a guess. No one can ever say it's true, but I know that I will always be with you. I'm warm by the fire of your love every day. So don't call me a liar, just believe everything that I say. There are 6 billion people in the world, more or less, and it makes me feel quite small, but you're the one I love the most of all. Of the love that you give me every night. There are 9 million bicycles in Beijing. That's a fact. It's a thing we can't deny, like the fact that I will love you till I die. And there are 9 million bicycles. And you know that I will love you till I die.
Don Jost in Florida, Ronan Seagrave in Winnipeg, and Thomas Berger in Texas are on Bondi Tunes International.
Now, if you've just joined us, I'm talking to Thomas Booker in Texas and Dawn Drost in Orlando, Florida. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. We must talk about Super Tuesday. Now, for me, Super Tuesday to me is when I have fish fingers and eggs for breakfast because I have them every Tuesday. That's Super Tuesday to me. What is Super Tuesday in America? Don't hold back.
Well, it's part of our election process. I don't know, Dawn, do you want to take this on? Or
Super Tuesday is a day when about a third of the country holds their primary elections for president. So it is a day where you get the broadest idea in the shortest amount of time as to who the nominee will be for the party that's not already in office.
Is a decision made about that on Super Tuesday? And are there a number of Super Tuesdays?
Well, yeah, well, there's Super Tuesday is the largest, but we have other, they're called primaries.
Yes.
And the reason they're called primaries is because they're electing the candidates in each particular party. So basically what it is, when I went to vote, I would have to go into the voting area and declare that I was going to request a ballot for Democrat.
Yes, so they would give me. Vote for the party that you are registered to vote for in a primary. In a general election, you can vote for either candidate, but on primary day, you're only allowed to vote for the nominees in your party. Sorry,
and in your Dawn, in your state as well. Is that right?
Yes, except
you're from California. So how does this work?
Well, I'm registered to vote in Florida now because I've lived here for 18 years. So I had to re-register in Florida. Right. So now I vote in Florida elections. So I also would have to vote for everyone's favorite idiot, Marco Rubio, and the greatest criminal mastermind ever, Rick Scott.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Oh, so he is
those,
evil.
Those are my two senators.
Rick so, Scott, is he looks like a Burmese python gotten loose and wearing a suit. He's got the, he's just this weird.
He looks like Voldemort.
Yeah, he really does.
Not that I've seen that movie.
But it's, so that's generally what you vote for. Mm. And sometimes there might be a special election as well for your primary on that day for like a, if there's like an emergency election for like a council position that has to be filled or a ballot measure that has come up that urgently needs to be taken care of. But usually it's a very quick, small ballot. You go in, you take care of it, and it's done.
Thomas has just messaged me, suggest Kingston Trio Tijuana Jail for Dawn's recollection about California. I love technology. Dawn, what do you know about this?
Recommend what?
Kingston Trio. Okay, Thomas.
It's way before her time, but back in the 50s and late 50s and part of the 60s, there was a folk group called the Kingston Trio. Do you remember
them? I've heard of them, but I'm...
They have one song about getting busted in the Tijuana jail. And so I was recommending it as transition.
Yeah.
I'll find it on YouTube and send it to you, Dawn.
Okay. I look forward to that. Thank you.
Okay.
So, so we've got Super Tuesday happening. And of course, you don't have to vote in America. Do you have to vote in the state elections like this or not?
No.
Well, nobody has to vote.
I know it sounds ridiculous for me to ask that. It sounds ridiculous for me to ask that question, but here you have to vote or they fine you $150 bucks in Australia.
No, you don't have to, but
What do you expect the turnout to be?
It's light. They have a very low turnout this year across the nation.
I think that will grow by the time it comes around to the general election.
Yes.
Especially now that the Supreme Court has ruled that Trump is allowed to be on the ballot everywhere. So now all of the maggots are going to come out of the woodwork and they're going to start voting.
I was going to ask you about Trump because some court has ruled on something recently with him. Sorry, I'm vague on this.
The Supreme Court, the ultimate court in the land, has decided that he is allowed to be on all of the ballots and that it was unconstitutional of Colorado to ban him under the Anti-Insurrectionist Act.
And the United States Constitution, but there being a state ruling over their electorate process, have no right to invoke it. According to the Supreme Court.
Are they a red state?
Unanimous. Their Supreme Court is a red state. Yes, it's a red.
The Supreme Court.
There's one big red state.
For the people, by the people, but slightly biased to the right, right?
It's more than slightly biased when Donald Trump himself
but it's a court of law.
Got to put three people on there, and Thomas is in bed with everybody who's bought him motorhomes and paid for all his vacations and
Alito is dirty. He is ghastly, but he...
John Roberts is useless.
Oh, he's
dirty.
This is turning into a slanging match.
We're not slinging mud, we're slinging truths.
Truth to power, right?
I would tell all of them this to their face. I honestly thought Alito was dead. I was surprised to find out he wasn't, and I was like, it shouldn't be. He's awful.
That ruling that he made on when they were shooting down Roe v. Wade was the most appalling piece it was just trash that he wrote. And a lot of it was just the ramblings of an old man who,
calling back stuff from the 14th century about witches.
Yeah, it was just awful.
Before we were even a country, calling back stuff from before we were even a country.
Now, that's an interesting call you make there, Dawn Drost, because I've just been advised by Thomas about a woman called Caitlin Doughty, D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, sounds like an Irish name, and I'm Irish and I can't even pronounce that. Tell me about Caitlin Doughty, or Doughty, how do you pronounce it, Thomas, and who is she?
Caitlin Doughty. Caitlin Doughty.
Doughty, thank you. We're going to play an audio clip, and but just explain about her, because she's very influential, it seems to me, on social media, and she's got good, interesting words, and it is a good link from what Dawn was saying, because in this case, what you're about to hear will be about her take on, I presume, British royals, Thomas.
Yes, the protocols for British royals. Mm. She has a beautifully deadpan sense of humor for a mortician.
And she's American.
I think she's in California. I think in California, if not the northern states, Washington state, something like that. Mm-hmm. But
so what about her?
Well, she has a series. What turned me onto it was I was chatting over on Facebook. I was going back and forth with a Facebook friend, and she mentioned that she had just seen this. This was actually, yeah, it was one November a couple of years ago, and it was right after the observation of the Kennedy assassination. But she sent it to me, and I watched the whole 1 hour. It was about a 45-minute video about what happened after Kennedy was shot, and what happened when he was in the hospital and he was pronounced dead, and what they had to go through. There was the medical examiner for the county that Dallas was in. And he was not going to allow the Secret Service to take Kennedy's body out of the hospital until he conducted an autopsy, had a medical exam, because this murder took place in his district. And there was a whole huge battle about that. Mm. And at the same time, they had to go, the other Secret Service people had to go out to a funeral home and look for a coffin. And the only one that was available at this funeral home was this big, huge metal enclosed, kind of monstrous thing. And they bought it, and they crammed it into the back of the one of their vehicles, and took it to Dallas Love Field, and went inside, and immediately started tearing seats out of Air Force One so the coffin would fit. It's insane. And then so Kennedy was transferred into that coffin, which wasn't very well sealed, and the wounds that he suffered, I mean, it was just his corpse was still exuding fluid from what had happened. And it just goes on from there. You have to watch it, but it was somber, and it's kind of like, a horror movie that has such gross and horrible scenes, but at the same time it's on the verge of being hysterically funny, but at the same time it's not. It's appalling.
Yeah. I
recommend that video from her, but she has others that are just excellent.
What we'll do is we'll just take an audio grab of Caitlin right now.
A royal death is all about timing. There are all manner of rules about how the press will inform the public. While the BBC was traditionally the first to know in the past, this time the International Press Association got the news of Philip's passing so his death could be announced worldwide. Flags were lowered, and all on-air news people were supposed to immediately change to black clothes.
Oh, wouldn't it be a problem for me? I'm already wearing black.
Well, government officials must put on black armbands if they aren't already in black. In 2002, there was a hubbub when a BBC broadcaster wore a red tie to announce the death of the Queen Mother. How vulgar! How positively naff! Once the death is officially announced by the media, a footman dressed in mourning clothes exits Buckingham Palace and pins a death notice to the gates. A nation is now on notice.
She seems really obsessed with British royalty, and I'm just looking at some of her links. London bridges down. The secret plan for the days after the Queen's death. Of course, that's a done deal. What is the protocol if a senior member of the royal family dies? The funeral of George the 4th, 5th, 6th?
George the 5th?
I can't read the Roman numerals. 1V, I think that's 4th.
4th.
Yes. Prince Philip funeral, blah, blah, blah. That would be an interesting funeral, wouldn't it, Thomas?
Yeah, it would.
Dawn, would you go?
Well,
if it's Prince Philip, I mean, it would be boring, but I'm just...
Well, everything about Prince Philip is boring.
Mm. Yes.
Okay.
Just like everything about King Charles is boring.
Dreadful, yes.
Except for back when he was doing the bit about the tampon. That was the only time that it was really like,
What was that about?
What?
I don't know about that.
Oh, God. Well, yeah,
that was back when we found out that he had been cheating on Diana. With Camilla. Yes. Because he got recorded on the phone saying that he wished he was a tampon so he could be inside her all the time.
This was back when cell phones.
That was, and that got recorded and it got played all over the world. People were like, yay, the future king, long live
That's
the
why
king.
I referred to him as the royal, his royal tampon. I mean, it's and yeah, it was, cell phones weren't digitized back then. They were kind of analog, and it was very easy for people to pick up cell phone conversations. They could listen on everybody's. This was, when was it? It was early, mid-90s or early 90s?
Yeah. Yeah, and they were still something you had to kind of carry with
and
a little briefcase.
Course, you know, the Red Tops in Britain and the newspapers, The Sun, The Mirror, they're just trash. And they had their very extended lenses on their cameras to get in on what was going on in the royal world, eh?
yes. I would not be surprised to find out it was like a Piers Morgan owned situation.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because at the
thought.
Time he had his hand in a lot of different tabloids and was running a lot
still
of things.
Still does.
Yes. So
he's on
not
some right wing television station and some digital TV network spouting out rubbish.
To find out if he's the one that had been doing that, because I know he really likes to try to tap the royals' phones.
Yeah,
but it still was not at all their finest moment.
Well, you know what, guys? You know, if you just joined us, I'm talking with Dawn Drost in Orlando, Florida, and Thomas Booker in San Antonio de Bayala, which I always say with the Spanish accent, in Texas. what was I going to say? Oh, dear. Chemo moment here. Yes.
Oh, no, it's okay. We're also doing a really good job of derailing any train of thought you might have.
Thank you so much, Dawn. Why are the Americans so obsessed with British royalty? I always find this amazing because the Irish couldn't give a damn. Well, they've got reason not to.
I couldn't give a damn about them either. Honestly, I really couldn't. But they end up on the news.
Why, Thomas? Do you care about royalty?
No. Actually, maybe Elizabeth was a nice lady, and she seemed to have a really good sense of humor, and she wound up being friends with the Beatles, and. All the other aspects of it, but for the most part, my mother-in-law, she's a lady. She grew up in a small Texas town, and it was a town that was settled by a lot of people from Czechoslovakia way back when. But she was there when they had the annum terribilis that the queen was having, and she actually sat down and hand wrote a letter to the queen. Talking about how her sympathies are with her because of the things going on, and that was kind of an interesting thing that she was so fascinated with the Queen, and she thought she was really a nice lady. And for everything I know, I mean, Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl. Someday I'm going to make her mine. Is that Paul McCartney or?
Wondering. I mean, to me, it seems like America desperately wants their own royal family.
No, I don't know why anyone would. If you know anything about all of the atrocities the British royal family have done among themselves, but
I'm
all the
get
things they've done with all the colonizing and all of the ways they've put back. They've essentially held countries
It's
hostage.
Okay, Henry, you're already on the convict colony. So
I bet I am. Hello, Toro.
We'd only care, I think a lot of people would truly only care if they were coming to repo us.
And hello to our friends listening in Britain and Ireland. I am in deep trouble with this one.
And no offense, because I'm a good part British. My maiden name is British.
Well, isn't everyone's? I mean, in America?
Yeah. I mean, there you go. Yeah.
Yes. Now, we were talking about Schoolies Week in Australia, which is equivalent to spring break in the United States of America. I wanted to ask you guys, about holidays generally for people our age. Dawn's the youngest, I'm the middle, and Thomas is the oldest. we were teenagers in different decades, all of us actually. Has your choice of holiday type changed? This is probably a rhetorical question. Dawn, you've got two children, obviously. And
I do. Oh my God!
Sorry, I just thought I'd remind you of that. Are they okay? Have you checked on them lately? The last couple of weeks.
yeah, They're
14
and
17. So 14 and 17. Gosh, since you've come in the air, they've just all grown up. I know. What do you do for holidays these days, and how different is it from, and bear in mind, Dawn lives in Florida, but she's from California. What was your choice of holiday in the old days?
Well, growing up in California, it was a really big deal if my family could afford to go to Disneyland, because it was... We either had to get on a plane to go, or once I drove when I was little, drove back, and I saw it was like 8 hours, like 8 or 9 hours. When I got older, that still became where we'd go. And actually, for a few years, my family went down and we spent Christmas at Disneyland, because it's
You ended up working for Disneyland, which is interesting.
I never worked for Disneyland. I worked for the Disney stores, but I did work for Disney World here.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
In a managerial capacity that was not anywhere on property. So I've never worked in a park or on the property, except for 2 weeks that I worked at a hotel, and that was a very odd situation. Now what I've done is I own because again it's Disney. Apparently that's what I do. My ex-husband and I bought into the Disney timeshare when my daughter was about 6 months old, so that we could go stay at any of the hotels. And it was like a 10-year payment for that. So we're like, okay, it'll be paid off when she's 10. But I got it in the divorce. So it's still something that
Was it a decent amount of money? Or?
Well, because...
You don't have to tell us.
We got a really big discount on it, so it cost about $10,000. But my friend just bought into the Disneyland end of it, where mine's at Disney World, but I can see he paid $75,000, and I'm like, that's stupid. And I'm like, you're an idiot, and that's fine. But he wanted it because I have one, and he's like, yours seems fun. And I'm like, yeah, but why did you pay that much? You're an idiot. So we would just go, I'll pull the kids out of school sometimes, and then I'll just surprise them and be like, hey, we're going to go stay at a hotel for a weekend. The last trip we did, though, we did a cruise for a week because
my kids have
never done one. And
where'd you go?
Jim has never done one. My fiance, we went to the Bahamas.
Oh, how beautiful. I'd love to go.
And a private island that they had too as well. We went to Nassau.
There's a Disney resort in the Bahamas?
We didn't do a Disney cruise. We did a Caribbean cruise.
Okay.
Carnival cruise.
Carnival.
Totally different.
Sounds fantastic.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun because Jim and I had our own room that had a balcony. And because the kids are old enough, they were allowed to have their own room that was across the hall. They can have their own room, but it can't have a balcony for safety reasons. Mm. So they felt like they had total freedom because they got to have their own space.
Fantastic.
And just right there was amazing. And I made sure we were on a deck with the pool so they could go out. They swam. They got all of the buffet food they wanted and ice cream and bacon and all the stuff they love. And I don't know if I've ever seen them that happy and that just...
Yeah. So, Dawn, it does seem to me like that when you have children, it's a whole different experience going on holidays. Thomas, I know you've got kids as well. When you were younger, though, what kind of holidays did you take? I know you didn't have the best of school days, Thomas, but after that, when you were an adult, we're looking at the 1970s, I'm guessing. What did you do for a holiday?
Well, I really didn't have to do too much because the place I was working at tended to send me out into the field. And there was one occasion when I was, I wound up being parked in a Maryland suburb of Washington, D.C. And I was there for almost a month. So I could just go traipse down to Washington, D.C. and go walk around. And I kind of didn't have vacation getaways per se. But that was one nice thing that I got to do. But I had other trips too to interesting places that I really liked. But I wanted to mention about the Disney resorts in Florida. They have a lot of what do you call, conferences and conventions and stuff, a lot of convention space. And I was sent to one of them for a training. I had a two-day training seminar that they were running, and so I had to attend. And it was kind of, to me, it was kind of weird. It was because I was walking into a Disney World. We had to get on a bus from the airport and go to the resort. And then once we got off the bus, we were stuck in this Disney World. And it
sounds
was
like
very
hell on wheels.
Well, it is very strange. It's like a country that Disney had taken over, like an authoritarian Disney experience.
Sounds like a horror movie.
Oh, it is.
The Disney World property is twice the size of the island of Manhattan.
Oh, my God.
Truly, that's how big it is.
Thomas, you mentioned you went to Washington, D.C.
What hotel did you stay at?
I can't remember the name of it, but all I can remember was when I got to the room and I turned on the TV, this was back when they had cables, so the TV set was automatically tuned to the Disney Channel.
It still does that.
And then
it shows your name. It'll say welcome, like for me, it'll say welcome Drost family. It'll say the weather today is blah, 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 and the park hours are blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And then change the channel.
I had a wake-up call set for me, and so when the phone went off in the morning for the wake-up call, I answered the phone, and it was Goofy. And he goes,
only in America.
For you to get up.
Only in America. Thomas, I was asking you about...
That's a real person.
I can't get a word in here.
It's a real person.
Yeah, they've had
if it's not Mickey,
it's not a real person. Don't they have AI?
If it's not Mickey doing the wake up voice, it's a real person.
Okay, for the
someone liked you.
Bondi Tunes International from the golden sands of Bondi Beach. Across your world.
For the third time, Thomas, you went to Washington, D.C. Did you go into Parliament and tell them all where to go?
Oh, God. No, I really wasn't interested in going to see I went to the Air and Space Museum and went to a bunch of other museums on the mall. And I was
What age were you going to museums on the mall?
I was in my 40s. You know?
Okay, that's fair enough. But
the first time I went to Washington, D.C., I was in my 20s and I wanted to go to the Smithsonian and the people wouldn't go with me. So I had to drag them to the National Archives. I had a ton of museums I wanted to go to because I wanted to see the National Archives terribly.
That was a big deal. That is a big deal to go see that. I didn't want to see Congress or White House or anything.
No, I wanted to see the Smithsonian and the National Archives, but I know the Smithsonian can take you just a week to get through it.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. You know, you both mentioned holidays when you were younger and even now. And going overseas is an interesting angle on this. A lot of Americans never leave America at all.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Australia, we have a similar situation in the sense that, you know, I come from Ireland, so I would go on holidays to France, Spain, Italy, Mallorca, all those places.
They were just a boat
and
right
cheaply.
Away for you, yeah.
Exactly. But here in Australia, there's Bali, and a lot of our American listeners will identify with Bali. Beautiful little...
Oh, no, I know it. It looks stunning.
Beautiful. I've been there three times. It's part of Indonesia. Indonesia has got 250 million Muslims, the largest in the world. And Bali is actually Hindu, which is interesting given that it's part of Indonesia. But it's a beautiful place. But my point here is that in Australia, I've been here 35 years. I'm not used to having to fork out so much money to get out of this country, and our government charges a fortune in taxes for doing nothing just to get out of this country. So
for
we are restricted.
Taxes? Wow.
Travel taxes, but they don't do anything. They're like, it's a service fee without the service. You know what I'm saying?
there are taxes. Just before we went into lockdown, I was supposed to go to a wedding in England. I've never been to Europe. I was thrilled. I was going to go and spend 2 weeks there. And after the wedding, I was going to travel around and go to Scotland and France. Mm. And I was going to just travel everywhere I could go by. I was definitely going to Ireland. I had made plans. I had already bought tickets to see plays on the West End. I was so stoked. The only thing I hadn't gotten yet, lockdown for COVID.
Oh.
And the airlines shut down, and the day I was getting ready to buy my airfare, they ended up postponing their wedding for like a year, and then they just got married in their backyard.
And you didn't attend that, clearly.
No, they did a live stream so that I could see it from home. I was supposed to be the entertainment. I'm the only American they know.
Well,
and
they just
wanted me to go. They just wanted me to go so that their family could have me say words.
Words.
Seriously.
Which you could have done over Skype.
They were having the reception in a pub that they lived under.
That's so terribly British.
And they wanted me to be like an MC. They were going to do a bunch of games, and they wanted me to MC the entertainment.
You'd be the token American. You know,
that was it.
You're the only American they know.
And of course, the first time her husband met me online, he was just like, "Say aluminium," and I'm like, "Aluminum."
It's so American. Dawn, is it an upside or a downside if you got stuck in Europe in the middle of COVID?
Oh, I think it would have been a if I could have.
Depends about the
left.
Kids, of course. You have two children, just to remind
me. I do. They weren't going with me, so it would have been a horrible downside. So I would have been there for a very long time. Mm. If they had been with me, it would have been amazing because it would have been something I could have shared with
education
them.
Education for them, too.
And yes, because that was a big thing about the cruise was places that I'm the only one who had ever been on a boat before. And that's the only place I've ever been out of America. I desperately want to travel and see the world. And apparently I'm the only person I know in real life who wants to also do that.
A lot of Americans, we're always banging on about how introvert the American media is, and they think Australia is Austria, and they get them mixed up. Thomas, would you like to get stuck in Europe during a COVID spree?
If I could get a nice little cottage or something out in the sticks and, in France, like in the countryside France, and have all the good cuisine, I wouldn't mind that at all. And then maybe also Denmark or some other fun place like that.
I know you've been to Japan. Have you been to Europe?
No, I have not been to Europe.
I want to go to Japan. I would like to get stuck anywhere I can get a good Scotch egg.
It's good Scotch egg in Japan.
Oh, yes.
Their cuisine, in Europe.
Their cuisine is, they do have Japanese cuisine, but then they also have chefs who can do European cuisine, too. And it was an interesting place. As a matter of fact, Melissa Melly can speak of it more. She's been more adventurous in terms of going and finding all the good food.
Yes, and just to explain, it's Melissa Grima. She's our correspondent. She calls herself Melissa Melly online. Melissa Grima is in Melbourne, and she's our correspondent here in Australia. My girlfriend's brother just flew out of Australia last night to Japan. I'd love to go to Japan. They're so different. They're weird, but in a nice way.
If they're nice, they're polite. They're totally polite. As long as you don't go act like a jerk.
Exactly.
And even when Americans do act like a jerk, the Japanese are, by now used to it.
Well, they have been at war with America and Britain.
Yeah, well, that's all past.
Yes.
That's all. Matter of fact, they have a thing called China that they're a little worried about, so they do want to be friendly with us and that. But it's a very orderly society, and it's very friendly. If you're polite and
they're very polite, very conservative.
And I was invited to a Japanese home where this director of the place we were working contracting with, and he presented, and it was this everything was very orderly. He had his children come into the room, and they would sit and attentively backing up against the wall. And
no screaming and shouting or any of that stuff.
No screaming and shouting or anything like that.
Yeah,
he helped us do a kind of a backyard Japanese barbecue, which was, it was a little family. That was the weird thing, though. This guy was like a senior executive, senior director, and we went to his neighborhood. This is a very unusual thing to get to see in Japan, was they have suburbs and they have separate houses, as opposed to, in the cities and everything, they have the high rises and what they call the rabbit warrens. Mm-hmm. But it was bizarre because I was.
They've got houses, Thomas, houses.
They've got houses, but they're tiny.
Small house, everything's tiny in Japan.
Is scaled down, and so the kids had the upstairs room, but like the upstairs room was almost like I could still touch the roof of the place.
I can hear Dawn almost drooling there. Dawn, what is it about Japan, because you sound like you'd love to go, what is it about Japan that you'd be interested in?
I would just like to get to explore someplace that is so it is unique. It also seems so technologically advanced to us.
Oh yes, they are.
And they run things so efficiently and smoothly. Yes. And I know that they have things like vending machines you can sleep in, like little pods.
Yes, yes.
And I would like, my daughter desperately wants to go as well. Wow. And it is just a place where
The one thing about Japan,
it would just be something that is amazing. And I'm not going to lie, I want to go to Tokyo DisneySea so bad. But
there is that.
I just want to get to go see what I can get out of vending machines. I think it will just be amazing.
It's interesting. Japan has its downside. I watched a documentary about a month ago about a lot of homeless people in Japan.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah, and Dawn, you mentioned, one of you mentioned the fact that people, you can actually book yourself in. They're mad about gambling and smoking. They're the two things they're mad about. You can
really?
You can live. You can live in these gambling places. You can actually live there, and some of them do, and they just play games and get drunk. They're allowed to bring in beer or whatever, and smoke. They can smoke in these tiny booths, and the homeless often go there because they have so much. The Japanese have so much pride, and if you're out of a job and you're homeless, you can't even tell people, and this is what they do. Thomas, are you a gambler?
No, I definitely do not. I hate the whole. I hate the whole idea of it. I think I've tried to play a couple of games of poker and everything, and lost my derriere on that. So
That was it for you.
The redeeming thing about also Japan that I really like the most is their train system. They have the really beautiful.
Oh,
you could can drive over ride over the whole. Of the islands of Japan and just go everywhere, and it's for really, really inexpensive trains, and they are like they're doing like 100 miles per hour would be how many kilometers?
About 180
kilometers. But they're quiet and they're smooth and
they're way ahead of the world, aren't they? I mean, really.
Yeah, they are in that. This culture does embrace technology, and it's all over the place, and they're all very, very comfortable with it. Mm. Now, I'm not saying it's a paradise there, because there are downsides. The one thing about the homeless people and other things about people who are getting into distress or getting into trouble is they just basically tend to disappear. They're there, and like I was watching all the people like in the train stations and seeing all the homeless people who were urinating on the tracks and all this kind of thing.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty desperate, pretty sad. But but everybody else, they just walk past and they don't let it. They aren't affected by it.
Yeah. Well, we're so over time. This always happens when I talk with Dawn Drost in Florida and Thomas Booker in Texas. This always happens. We nearly had a serious conversation, but we didn't quite get there.
I can use a break from the series.
Were we supposed to have a serious conversation?
I don't know. I was going to talk about U.S. politics, which we sort of brushed on, and apparently that's really not serious anyway.
It was a nice break from that crap. Thank you.
Yes, yes.
Okay, Dawn and Thomas, thank you so much for joining me here on Bond iTunes.
Oh, thank yeah, this you. Was a rare pleasure. And Dawn, good to hear from you.
Oh, it is always my pleasure. I have missed you two terribly.
I know. We need to do Across the Gulf.
It's the
I know we do. See, that's why you can't get a word in, because I'm used to sometimes I talk to Thomas by just the two of us. So
I'm going to attempt to try and do an outro to this. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Okay, we're out, guys.
Came to town the other night, I heard the noise, I saw the fight. The watchman, he was running around, crying, old Dan Tucker had come to town. Now get out the way, get out the way. Won't you get out the way, old Dan Tucker, you're too late to get your summer. His face in a frying pan, combed his hair with a wagon wheel, and he died with a toothache in his heel. Now get out the way, get out the way. Won't you get out the way, old Dan Tucker, you're too late to get your summer. To the right, then to the left, then to the gal he liked the best. Now get out the way, get out the way. Won't you get out the way, old Dan Tucker, you're too late to get your summer. Now old Dan Tucker is a nice old man, he used to ride a derby rag, sent him whizzing down the hill. Supper. Old Dan, he's had his last ride. The banjo buried by his side. Now get out.
And lovely talking with Thomas Booker and Dawn Drost in America. We've got lots more coming up in less than 30 seconds here on Bondi Tunes International. As they say, please don't go away.
Henry O'Donovan.